Welcome, everyone, to the newest episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I appreciate you listening to the show. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and get more content, other podcast episodes at dsmsports.net. You can always subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher as well. Really excited for today's show. We're going to be talking to Josh Decker. I've known him for a few years now, and just a really bright guy, really impressive what he has done. He is the CEO of Tagboard, and they've just had tremendous growth, not just in sports, but really all over the place and still doing some big things, and really, really cool story and a lot of great inspiration in our conversation with Josh today. But first, this episode's helpful tool. And this helpful tool is really good for a social media person in particular, or really any project manager. But because social media really does touch so many different parts of an organization, from sales to marketing to sponsorship to CR to content to game operations, PR, just to name a few. And it's really important to be on the same page as everyone. And also, and we have a bunch of projects that are ongoing as well, to all be able to work in the same space and see what's going on and see the timelines of what everyone else is working on. And you may have used this site before. It's called Trello. It's a project management site. It's free. And you build boards and also make lists on boards and start to, you can also have visuals on there as well, of course, and basically manage your projects and their timelines. And what this episode's helpful tool is, though, is the Trello app. Of course, everyone has an app now, but it's so important because you're on your mobile device so much, and to be able to really keep track of a project, update a Trello board, it's kind of like Slack, but a little bit more project-oriented instead of just different channels. You have different boards that are related to projects. Check it out. It's a pretty user-friendly tool. You can start building up today, keep track of a project or campaign, what collateral is needed, what meshing is needed, get stuff approved, comment on things as you see them, and it's really a pretty nice thread and a way to organize a bunch of projects and timelines at the same time. So check it out. You can try Trello.com as well, but I am just checking out the app and really hadn't used it until recently. Definitely a fun tool and a good useful tool to help keep track of everything. So check it out. That's episode's helpful tool. It's the Trello mobile app. It's free. I've used the iOS one. So give it a look, and we'll be right back to have a great conversation with Josh Decker, the CEO of Tagboard. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool, and now we are delighted to be joined by someone who's been in the industry for a little while now. They're doing big things. We're talking to Josh Decker. He's the CEO of Tagboard. Welcome to the podcast, Josh.
Hey, how's it going? I appreciate you having me here, and obviously longtime friend from Twitter, and actually met you in person not too long ago, which was pretty awesome, and it's a great honor to be here today.
Oh, I love it. We are delighted to have you on and looking forward to talking all things Tagboard. What you guys are doing is just the best in the biz, and it's been cool to see the company grow for a good reason. But before we get into the meat of the discussion, I want to hear about you, your career path, how you came up in the game, getting started more on the tech side, and starting up Tagboard and growing with it, and any tips along the way for folks that want to emulate your path.
Yeah. Well, the key in my past is basically just fail forward. I've actually, this is not my first rodeo. It's not my first business. In fact, I started my first business in high school. I was really into modifying cars, German cars to be specific. Mm-hmm. At the time, the only German car I could afford was a Volkswagen. So I started a company to get the only reason I started this company was so I could get cheap parts for myself, because I heard that if you got a business license and you applied to be a reseller, then you can get parts at 30 or 40% off retail, which was the only way I could afford to get the parts. And so that's how I did it. And anyways, I ended up selling parts to my friends and making money and ended up paying for my hobby just in my spare time. I literally would show up to these car get togethers with a trunk full of parts that people had ordered from me. And it was pretty fun. So I went to college in Spokane, Washington. I'm from Seattle originally, born and raised, go Hawks. Seattle Seahawks, Mariners, Sonics, Sounders fan, obviously. And so I went to school in Spokane, Washington, in a university called Whitworth, mm-hmm. A small, under 2,000 undergrads, smaller school. And I studied business management and computer science. And I had taken some early acceptance classes when I was in high school, was transferred over, and I was able to graduate with almost a double major in 3 years. I was one class short of a double major, but I just couldn't bring myself to turn down all the opportunities I had in the real world to go back to get another degree. And to tell you how little I really actually cared about my degree after I got it was I actually never even got my degree, the paper to hang on the wall, for about 10 years. Somebody asked me about it. Maybe it was my mom, and she reminded me how much she had spent on that piece of paper. So you better get that piece of paper hung up somewhere. And so, although it's not hung up somewhere, it's sitting in my office in some drawer, I'm sure. Don't get mad, mom, if you heard that. So, but yeah, I'm definitely excited to, was excited to get out into the real world. I was excited to, I learned so much more by doing than by reading or by hearing about what other people did. And so I started a web design company in college. I was doing web design for different companies and nonprofits, and I was coding everything myself in Notepad, you know, back before there was even, this is back in the 90s, so that dates me a bit, unfortunately. And then right out of college, I got a really good job offer to go work for a startup company. And back then, I didn't really even know what a startup company was. I just know it sounded really fun. So right out of college, my first job out of college was like every kid's dream. I was a certified Microsoft systems engineer with like NT server, SQL server certified in college. So I was pretty skilled on the server side of things. Yeah. And so I was hired to be a network administrator for the startup company. I walk in the door no later than like a week and a half, 2 weeks after I start. There was like 60 employees. They laid the entire company off.
Oh, geez.
They had the five or six executives were on some sort of like agreement where they had to keep these guys on for another 6 or 9 months or something. Mm-hmm. And they told the powers that be that laid them everybody off, they said, well, we can't operate without a network administrator. And so this guy's the newest guy, so he's the cheapest, so let's keep him. And I actually knew one of the guys that was one of the executives. It was a friend of mine. And so my job for almost 9 months was basically we converted all the servers in the entire office into Counter-Strike servers, and we played Counter-Strike for 10 hours a day for 9 months.
That was my, and
I got paid for it. And that was my first job out of college. No matter what you do, it just goes straight downhill from there, I'm sure, right?
But that's unreal. Short,
I moved around a bit in the industry. I worked for several different startup companies. I started my first real business in 2002. Mm-hmm. I got the idea of, I started selling car parts again, and I was working for a startup company, a lead web developer at this point, doing some cool stuff. I was making really good money for my age, but I got that itch, that entrepreneurial itch, that thing that just like said, I'm not satisfied just sitting in a desk making money. I want to do something special with my life. I want to do something meaningful. And for me, what that meant was I wanted to pursue the things that I was passionate about. And so I had started getting, I could afford a nicer German car at this point, so I moved into Audis. And I'm still driving Audis, by the way. I haven't moved on up above that to anything like Lamborghinis yet or anything. So that'll be the next step, right? But for me, although those aren't German cars, those are Italian, but they're owned by the same company. So, but the cool part about it was that I was doing enough business selling car parts that I was importing them from Germany, and I ended up getting to the point where I was working all day long, and I come home at night. Kiss my beautiful brand new wife at the time. We had just gotten married. But then I'd spend 4 or 5 or 6 or 10 hours at night, sometimes all through the night, packaging up all these products. And I was moving like $20,000 to $50,000 a month in parts through my garage.
Holy crap.
And on my lunch break, I would drive to UPS and drop off like 25 boxes worth of parts. And then I was importing like basically like half of a container at a time of these really rare parts from Germany. And I got to the point where my wife's like, you do realize you're making like twice as much money doing this as you are going to your day job, and you don't even seem to care or like your day job very much, so why don't you just do this full time? I'm like, really? You'd be okay with that? And she's like, if it meant that you actually came to bed at night and didn't work through the night every single night, you know, it would be worthwhile. So we made a decision, as my wife and I made a decision, that we were going to start this business. I actually opened up a brick and mortar shop. It was called Octuning. Mm-hmm. Which is a kind of a play on the word Achtung, which is a German for attention, and we were doing, or caution, and we were doing, you know, all German parts. So mm-hmm. I opened up a tuning shop. We got lifts. I got a mechanic. I grew it in about a little over four years. I grew it from, you know, $20,000 a month in my garage, to over $1.6 million a year in sales.
Wow. It sounds like a Shark Tank story almost.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. But here's the problem with it, is when you're selling products that other people make, there's very little profit in it. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I busted my tail. I worked as hard as possible, but I just couldn't make it work. I couldn't make the numbers work. And so I ended up selling the company in early 2006. And at that point, I had just kind of run out of steam. You know, I tried everything I could. I made some mistakes, and I considered it a failure. I sold it off. Today, Octuning is alive and well. They're doing, you know, way more than I ever could with the business. It's an international brand name now. People all over the world recognize it, and it's a great success story in itself.
Yeah,
but I couldn't get it to the point where it needed to be, and so I left that. And so from there, and I know I'm spending a little bit more than I anticipated on this, but I just want to get you my backstory. I started realizing that if you really want to make money in the automotive industry, you need to make your own products. And so I started a manufacturing company, manufacturing carbon fiber composite racing seats. And I know, like, a really bespoke market, but we ended up making it. We bought a company that was in Taiwan. We moved them to Monroe, Washington, which is about 35 miles from here. And we set up shop there, and we were making seats, and we did a good job. I mean, it was a great product. We FIA approved. We went through all these things. I learned so much through that process. I ended up getting to the point where I ended up leaving the business, unfortunately, through some different circumstances. But the company's still alive and well, and you can look up Status Racing, which is the name of that seat company. And so even though I didn't financially profit from that business, I left in the scenario that I left. I won't get into the details of it, but I ended up not like minting myself or making a bunch of money off of it. I basically just left the company. And but I'm proud of the fact that I can look at it and still see it succeeding today, and that's a brand that I work with. And so at that point, I got kind of frustrated with life. I got frustrated with kind of doing my own thing. And I ended up looking, I was looking for the next opportunity. I was looking for, like, this is 2009, and you know, I've got two kids at home. You know, I've got, you know, a family to take care of. And I took about 2 months looking for the right opportunity. And I just couldn't find anything that satisfied the desire for me to do something exciting with my life, something that I cared about. Mm-hmm. So, long story short, I know that that's a joke because I've been talking for years, but I started a website called Quattro World. And the premise behind it was going to be an Audi website for Audi fans to congregate and get together. Mm-hmm. Now, full disclosure, there was another website before it called Audi World. I had sold off to some conglomerate. The conglomerate came in and kind of ruined it, changed the software, and went from a really popular, highly loved open source platform that we had all been using for over 10 years together, hundreds of thousands of users on this website, and they switched to a proprietary system that we all hated. And so I just basically said the community is going to fall apart. Nobody wants to stay in this website anymore.
Right.
And these are my friends. These are the people that I care about. These are the people that made Octuning a success, that I became friends with, that I cared about them. I sent them gifts when they got married or had a baby. I mean, these are people that I cared about. Mm-hmm. And so I set up Quattro World just to keep the community together. And next thing you know, it became an overnight success. We had 65 million page views our first year and grew from there. It became a really big phenomenon, we inherited 90% of the traffic and the user base of the old website overnight to my new website.
That's awesome.
It was really cool, and it was kind of the intersection of all the little bits and pieces of my past, from web development and server administration to, yeah, you know, caring about cars and the community, and now I'm running this website with hundreds of thousands of users and millions of page views monthly, and this was a community that I was now kind of the steward of. Now I didn't own the community; it wasn't my community. I was just in the position of leadership in that community. And it was from the ownership of that role and trying to manage that community. That's where I got the original idea for Tagboard back in like early 2010. Mm-hmm. And the problem that I had was I looked at it like a house with a bunch of rooms, right? And you have conversations happening in all these different groups. So you have let's say you have the Twitter room over here, the Facebook room over here, WordPress, YouTube, Instagram, forums, you know, all these different disconnected conversations and communities growing disconnected from each other. And I wanted a way to bring it all together and to combine that community into one larger active community. And that's really the whole idea and the basis for the foundation of what is today Tagboard.
And so from there, what happens from idea to making it into a reality and ultimately a business?
Well, it took me about a year. I was just playing around with ideas. The first iteration of Tagboard, most people have no clue about this, was supposed to be like the next generation of forum software. Mm-hmm. And we were going to disrupt the vBulletins of the world and come out with a better mousetrap for discussion. But what we did is we started playing, like the original idea from its inception always was based around the hashtag and based around social media being kind of the power and the source of content for the new version of the forum software. We recognized really early on that no one cared about forum software anymore and we needed to move away from that. So we pivoted a bit to focus solely on the aggregation of social content from the source networks. And we started working with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and some others to bring in content into one place and create kind of a social hub. And it's something that we're really proud of. We're the first company in the entire world to come out with this. We invented it. I have a patent sitting next to my desk here that says it's about social aggregation and hashtag searching.
Wow.
And you know, that patent was filed in early 2012, and so for us, you know, to basically be having been done, we've been doing this for longer than anybody, and it's something for us where the heart of it all is community. The heart of it all is building something that brings people together and breaks down the walls that social silos have created. Because every person out there has their own unique value to bring to their communities. Mm-hmm. And it should be up to them to choose what social network or what medium they should use to bring that content to the table. Sometimes it's video, sometimes it's animated GIFs, which is of course what we typically share back and forth. Sometimes it's really, you know, great words and things like that. So for us, it's about creating something that brings people together, breaks down those walls, and creates one larger community. And we believe that by breaking down those walls and bringing people together, you create this dynamic that has amazing results. The results are, you know, we're seeing in stadiums, for instance, a 1,000% increase in engagement when Tagboard is being used. You know, we see time on site tripling or quadrupling when Tagboard embeds are put on the website or in the mobile app. You know, for us, it's creating something of value, not just being a place for a sponsor logo, right, not just being, you know, something to fill the scoreboard up or to put on TV or on a website to fill a blank space. That's not what Tagboard is about. Tagboard is about connecting the community together in a lasting and meaningful way not just a flash in the pan thing. You know, we've had people, like I remember the first time we ran at Husker Stadium. I'll use a specific example. The team there reported back to us that it was the single biggest day spike that they've ever had in the number of people following them on Facebook, for instance. It was a massive spike. And that wasn't even built into our platform.
Yeah.
Which is an auxiliary result of the elevated level of conversation about their team. And so for us, it's about creating value like that that also goes back to the source networks. We have a thing that we call the egg effect, which is when we put tag word up on a public display somewhere, there's a bunch of people signing up for Twitter for the first time or reactivating a dormant account to engage and interact with the community. And then those connections can last beyond that one moment, and people find value in the source networks, and not just Twitter, but Facebook and Instagram and others, in a new way that they hadn't seen before, and it provides value so that connection can last.
No, especially for fans that may not have a bunch of friends on their own social networks that are talking about the same thing, but now you have this easy entry into a community that is talking about what you're talking about, that has your interest, that is at the game that you're at or the event you're at or whatnot. How did sports come about, or was that the big breakthrough? Was that the first industry you had in mind where this could really play well, or what was the consideration there for how to enter into this and start this business up, I guess?
Okay, so we put this thing out on the internet like in August of 2012, mm-hmm. and we just like sat back and watched it and see what people did with it. You know, we were like excited when we got into like, we have like 12 people on a website right now. And I had like 11 tabs open, you know, so it was one of those things where you're watching the numbers closely. And I remember a Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning, I'm sitting at home on my couch, and next thing you know, massive spike in traffic, like thousands of people on our website. And I'm like, what is going on? And we couldn't figure it out. Obviously, we were able to see where the traffic was going. It was all going to the hashtag UDUB, UDUB, which is the University of Washington's football game day hashtag at the time. And so what happened was that the head of social media for University of Washington Athletics, a guy named Daniel Auer, he's not there any longer, but he's down near Eric Neck of the Woods now, found Tagboard, changed a link on their website that used to go to the Twitter search results. He changed it to Tagboard. And everyone started going to Tagboard, interacting, connecting their Twitter accounts, talking to each other, posting there, and it became kind of the place where people were talking about it on game day. And so that was a really cool opportunity for us to say, wow, somebody grabbed a hold of it. So the very first external, market, product market fit, you'd call it, was in sports, and it was the University of Washington Athletics program.
Mm-hmm. And then from there, like, did you guys start reaching out to athletic programs or teams? And obviously, you had to at some point go from just the software solution and the aggregation to the actual, logistics of making sure that you're curating only things they want that are relevant, the approval process. What was it like actually starting to work with teams and work with athletic programs and get that tag board, not just on their website, but in their stadium as well?
Well, so when we built this company, when we started building tag board, we never really gave much thought to like putting tag board up on a big screen somewhere. Mm-hmm. It was more going to be just like a web-based only, kind of like a dynamic forum of sorts.
Right.
But what the interesting things happened in November, just a month after the story I told you about UW, a month or two after that, Audi came to me and said, we really love what you've done to bring our content together. And they had used it for a couple internal projects. And obviously, I knew a few people there from my Audi days, right? So kind of a full circle there. They said, we want to put this up on a trade show booth for international trade shows. We want to put stylized social content up above the booth on a 40-foot wide screen. And we're like, yes. We had no idea how the hell we were going to pull it off, but we said yes to it anyways because we knew we'd figure it out, and we did.
Of course.
And what ended up happening from there was running the international show circuit with Audi doing these custom screens. So fast forward to like maybe December or January, I'm somebody sends me a link or a post on Facebook. You know, I'm a huge Mariners fan, always have been my whole life. And they announced that they were installing a 202-foot wide screen called Mariners Vision in the outfield of Safeco Field. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is serendipitous, this is perfect. We've got to figure out a way. Now we were emboldened. We realized the value behind displaying a beautiful, crisp, clean call to action and inviting the fan or the customer or the person visiting that auto show booth to connect with the brand and join the conversation. Mm-hmm. And if you invite them to share their story, they're going to do it. And in fact, at the LA Auto Show, which is 4 years ago today, actually, and this is the time of year that it's in, they had more usage of the hashtag Audi than all other brands at the show combined. And the result was a resounding success, and it was awesome to see that. And so we saw the value, right? And we were like, what about sports stadiums?
Yeah.
This is going to be awesome. And so we are very fortunate enough to get introduced to Kevin Martinez and his team, Nathan Rauschenberg and Ben Mertens and Greg Green and the amazing team at the Mariners. They saw what we had built for Audi, and we said, we want to build something like this for you here at Safeco Field. And it was like a physical weight had been lifted off their shoulders, and their response to what we showed them was like, not only do we want this and need this, but we've been trying to figure out a way to build this ourselves, and we haven't figured it out. And so we realized that this is something that people were desiring to have, but no one had figured it out yet, and we came up with a way to do it. And so for the 2013 season, we ran tag board for the first time in a stadium at Safeco Field with the Mariners team, and we've been running it every game since then. And so and now we've been in over 100 stadiums globally, everything from European Premier League teams to UFC fights to, you know, half of the professional stadiums in America probably have at some point ran a version of tag board. You know, for us, we've obviously found kind of a market here. But the one thing I want to say is that, you know, while sports has been a pinnacle and kind of a spearhead for us in public display, it's only about 10-15% of our overall market today.
Wow.
We have brands and broadcast, like television integrations. You probably saw us think, whether you realize it or not, things like massive events, like we've run at Super Bowls and World Series. We've run at RNC, DNC, election night. We've run for, you know, the debates. We've run behind the scenes on many major shows. We're going to be running at things like that, like the Macy's Parade coming up and other stuff like that. So we're out there. One of the numbers that blows me away whenever I look at it is we do our very best job to conservatively figure out how many impressions we're creating every. That number right now is growing like crazy, and it's well over 5 billion impressions of our product every month.
Wow. Oh, that's hard to comprehend.
It's crazy, man. You know, we've powered displays either on web or in the stadiums or whatever. And now obviously the vast majorities are not paid clients. We do have a free product out there. Well, we've powered over 3 million hashtags to date. And, you know, for us, it's been about always having, like, we look at ourselves as like a B2B2C company. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily design our product for the director of marketing for a sports team, right? We design our product to reach their community. And what I mean by that is that one of the differences with tag board, and I'm not trying to do a sales pitch here at all, I'm just trying to give you an example of what makes it a little bit different, is that we've designed it really with the community at heart. The first priority has always been the community for us. Now, we have to build enterprise tools and things behind the scenes to make that work for them. But the most important person in the entire equation is that person sitting in the stand or sitting on their couch watching TV or opening up that mobile app or that website. That's the person that we design and build for first and foremost. Because if we can take care of that community, then the brand, the sports team, the television station, or the network is going to like what we build for them because it reaches their community, it connects them together, and it creates a lasting, you know, impact.
Yeah, that's the way to go for sure. And I guess I did want to dive in a little bit to whether the social media network started taking notice and were like, look at what these guys are doing. It's really cool. We should work with them, or vice versa. Did you guys start to go to them and say, "Hey, we're leveraging your API and doing some really cool stuff"? How have those relationships played out and helped as you guys have grown throughout the years?
That's actually been one of the most difficult parts of this role is finding a way to continually drive value to the source networks, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing for us right now is that like we got in really early. Like we were meeting with people like Facebook and Twitter like before we even had product launch, right? We wanted to make sure that when we did this, we did it the way that they wanted us to and the way that brought them value. Because we wanted nothing more than just to be a good partner with them. Now, with that being said, that's a gross oversimplification of the entire process, because when you have multiple conflicting partners and you're trying to provide them all value at the same time, it becomes a difficult process, right? And you have to, and one thing that I will tell you, and this is something that I think has served us and most importantly served the end user really well, is we haven't played favorites. We haven't, even though there's been times when we wanted to with different, like you know, but it's times when we felt the best thing for us to be is to be agnostic and have the best relationship we can with each of the source networks, but we're not gonna promote one of them above one of the other ones. Right. And we leave it up to them to create the best damn network there is, and we want them to create the value so that when there's a call to action to use a hashtag, they pull their phone out of their pocket to make a post, to share an experience, to connect with a community, that is up to the source networks to win that moment, right? And so for us, we wanted to just kind of stay out of that. We wanted to find a way to let the source networks battle it out. I think that that's the most healthy way to do it. And with that being said, we have the most awesome partnerships. I couldn't imagine having better partnerships with the source networks. We've been working with the same people for years now. We've become friends with them. It's something for us where I am so fortunate for those relationships that have allowed us to really build Tagboard in a healthy and sustainable way. But then you have things coming along and kind of throws you a curveball. Like the growth of Snapchat has been really great, and we've been doing some really cool things with Snapchat. And for us, it's really about, again, being the platform for display and understanding that the source networks, as much as we want to kind of see the way it is now continue forever, some of them are going to come and go or change or modify. There's going to be a new player that comes out. It's something where for us, we want to just be kind of the platform that enables it, enables that interaction, that conversation. And like I said, that's why we try to put all the source networks on an even playing field,
right,
so that they have, you know, that there's not, and in some cases we do, you know, Facebook or Twitter or Snapchat only displays when the client asks for it, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
We even are doing displays now that aren't based solely on the hashtag as well. So a lot of news organizations are just, you know, pulling together a story of tweets or social posts to tell a story on the news. And that's a different way of looking at it as well. So we're moving in different directions now. And with our acquisition recently of Capture, we're doing a lot more in the areas of e-commerce and the transition of getting formalized permission to use content for commercial or for broadcast purposes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're trying to expand a bit, But we're also trying not to be everything to everybody, right? We want to be the best company Tagboard can be. And we look out in the marketplace and we see everybody trying to do everything and they end up not doing much of it well, right? Mm-hmm. And if all you're looking at doing is checking off boxes to see if you have this feature or not compared to another competitor, you're missing the point. You need to focus on building a product that does what it does better than anybody else. And certainly there's some things like analytics and things that we've added in that help tell the story, but we're not trying to be the best analytics company in the world. Right. We're just trying to be the best tag board that we can be and providing value to our clients. And most of the things that we build, 90% of what we build is in direct response to our clients. And, you know, when we have over 10,000 clients, historically, we've been able to, pull from so many different relationships and opportunities. And that's, you know, again, powering over 3 million hashtags globally. We've had so many different experiences where we've learned, we know what people want and need, and hopefully we can kind of sit behind the scenes and help encourage that conversation and that community to flourish.
And there really is so much value you're bringing to the table in a lot of different angles, no matter how you look at it. And just to reset here, having a great conversation with Josh Decker, CEO of Tagboard. Just a few more minutes left here before this episode's shareable stat. And obviously, there is the data you guys are bringing, how much impressions they're getting, not just with stuff that's displayed, but the stuff that's not displayed, I'm sure, and what's going out there. You have the display, the engagement. You have the opportunity for monetization and ads. And I guess when you are working with, especially looking at the sports and entertainment space, I guess, is it mostly seen as this is an expense that we're going to have because we want to enhance the experience and increase brand engagement, or do a lot of companies and teams see it as, you know, this is an engagement tool, but something that will be monetized or will be sold to a sponsor in some way? Or do you see a little bit of both, I guess?
Well, we don't do any advertising or sponsorship sales ourselves.
Right. I meant on their end, where they're looking at this is an investment in our fans, or this is an investment in something that we'll be able to partner with a corporation on the team side.
Well, we look at it as much more than just a public display tool, right?
Right.
It's a community engagement tool, and we have interactions and tools that allow you to put Tagboard in front of your fan or your community no matter where they're at, whether they're on your website, whether they're in your mobile app, whether they're in a retail store or at a one-time event like a conference, or they're in your public stadium or watching your content on television. We have hundreds of different types of displays that go all across the board, from ribbon boards and stadiums to app integrations, like we've done with you guys
right
in the past. So for us, it's about reaching the fan at every fan touch point, reaching the consumer no matter where they're at, and giving them that opportunity to engage and giving them that call to action to hopefully get them to draw that content or that conversation out of them. And then the second part of your question there, I guess, was about sponsorship. And for us, we've had people tell us that, you know, verbatim, quote unquote, Tagboard is the most valuable real estate in the stadium. When Tagboard goes up, every eyeball goes at it. They can't take their eyes off it. And when you can put a sponsorship logo on there to augment or to be presented by, you know, AT&T, like at the Longhorn Stadium in Austin, 100,000+ people there. When that screen goes up with Tagboard, everyone's looking at it, posting their selfies and their photos. They said there's a big AT&T logo there because that's their corporate sponsor, and we love to provide that value to the teams. And you know, obviously, in sports, there's a huge opportunity for things to be sponsored. Like the new Viking Stadium, they have sponsors for their tag board. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great opportunity for that brand to be associated with something really fun and engaging.
Totally. One more question for you before these episodes of Shareable Stat, and it just kind of hit me too that just talking so much about Tagboard, I feel like Tagboard's just about at that point where you guys are kind of like Kleenex or Jell-O, where if it's social media aggregation and or display, you're just like, oh, check out that Tagboard. Even if it's not a Tagboard branded thing, but the majority or usually is, it feels like you guys have reached that brand point. So that's kind of cool there.
Thank you. Well, we've had probably I think our product is the most recognizable in the market, and we have seen so many times, and it's just frustrating. I'm sure you've probably seen it happen too, but when you see they'll post some just random college football fan will post a picture of one of our competitors and say, "Mom, look, Mom, I'm on the tag board." It has a pretty cool feeling, because even though they tried to copy us and they did a good enough job to where somebody actually, thought that it was ours. But, that's about what we're trying to do. We're trying to be the behind the scenes. We're trying to power the communities. And at the end of the day, if we can become the default standard for that, then I think we're doing a really good job of it. But I also know that we have plans to go way beyond that, and then a lot more things that we want to do with this company. We're not just going to stop at stadium screens, for instance. And I feel like it's if you even look back through some of my social posts, the stadium stuff and the sports stuff is just so fun and so sexy and so, but it's also, I get just as excited when some, nonprofit organization uses us behind the scenes, or, we've had groups like Anonymous and others who are trying to do things globally, using us to connect their community together. It's not just about the bling. It's not just about the big shiny stuff. It's about communities of all types together. And I think that's as long as we can keep from getting too distracted by the big and shiny, then we can succeed long term.
And I think for anyone listening too, we think of these big stadiums, we think of the DNC, we think of big conferences, but there's a lot of folks like myself included who are just going to the tag board website and creating a tag board because it helps us track SM Sports Chat or things like that. And it really is something that no matter what size or what industry you're in, it can be a helpful place to really create that community. So I definitely love that. That aspect of it.
Well, yeah, it's just great to see it provide value, and I mean, if the perfect thing you can do is go out to Twitter and do a search for tag board, and you probably get targeted by some of our competitors with advertising. But so I apologize in advance for that. But you'll see some really cool communities using tag board in all different shapes and sizes. Some of my favorites include like the Brooklyn K-12 school district. Using us across different schools to connect their teachers and families together. How cool is that?
Wow.
I mean, they don't pay us any money, but we provide a valuable service to them to be able to connect people together beyond just one single network, right? And I really like that, and I really feel like we're doing something special. And we're in a time right now where there's so much going on in the world that sucks, and there's so much to be frustrated about. But as a community, no matter what you're passionate about, if you can come together with people who are like-minded, you can connect together and engage on a higher level. You're going to improve your community. And if you can improve your community, then you're going to improve the world around yourself. And if we all do that, I'm trying to get off my soapbox here. I'm not trying to preach at anybody. But if you can affect positive change within your community, then you're going to make the world a better place. And if we can empower people all over the world, millions of people globally, every day, to connect better with their communities, then hopefully we can make a difference out there. And with all the negativity and hate in the world, we want to be a voice of love and of just coming together as a community. And I think that if you you look at the way that we try to run our company and the way that we try to focus on the user first, it's really baked into who we are as a company and who I am as a person as well.
Yeah, and for being a company that is doing stuff all around the world, you guys really are, you're close to your customers, you see the relationships with everyone, and it's cool that you guys take pride in your work and in people you help empower, and it's really, I love that for sure. What is it like being at some of those huge events on the tag board side, I guess, when you have millions of posts coming in? Making sure that the programming and I guess some aspect of AI or just programming is curating it all appropriately? And how much has that evolved over the years?
Well, we've never removed the human element from it, because no matter how perfect computer learning can be, it's not going to be perfect. And The thing that we're trying to not do is replace the human connection with the community. Mm-hmm. Because if it's all algorithms and data and it's impersonal, that there's no connection there, right? And so for us, there's still somebody, but you go to a Ravens game or you go to the Saints or you go to a Golden State Warriors or whatever, or you're watching television on, you know, watching the Macy's Day Parade next week, you don't see stuff that's been put there by a computer. You see something that was hand-picked by a moderator,
right?
99% of the time is on the side of the team or the brand. We don't hire third-party moderators to come in and impersonally grab stuff. We give the people who are closest to the community are the ones usually selecting that content. And that's why I think it has such high engagement. It's because they understand it and they know it and they connect with it.
Yeah.
And they know that it's meaningful. And so no algorithm can ever replace that. The problem with that is that you obviously have the human factor involved as well. When we've had a few times when not the right stuff has come through because somebody missed something in an image or they missed something on the 15th hashtag on the Instagram post, but that's okay. You know, we built tools to filter that stuff out as well when it gets through the human filter. But the human element is so important and so vital to what we've built, and I don't think that'll ever go away.
That's a great
sentence. We provide tools to improve it and to, you know, filter out the 90% of the junk and provide them with a bucket of the best stuff that we can. But the end result that puts something in front of a community, I think it's always going to be a human.
That's a great sentiment for sure. And man, Josh, I could seriously ask you questions about this stuff all day. I geek out on it, and it's so cool to see what you all are doing to really improve just everything and make these communities of fans really feel like they're more connected than ever before. But we're going to pick your brain a little bit more, have a little fun, our Decker on Display section coming right up. But first, episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with that.
Really enjoyed talking to Josh. Just a lot of wisdom, a lot of insight. Cool hearing the story of Tagboard and what they do, what they stand for, and all the rapid growth they're really continuing to enjoy. But we're going to have a little more fun with Josh coming up in our Decker on Display section. But first, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat is all about Snapchat. We talk a lot about it, but a pretty astounding stat came out recently, and that is that the average TV channel attracts 6% of viewers, of consumers and viewers in the 18 to 34 year old range, 6%. Compare that to Snapchat, and how much do they reach? Of 18 to 34 year olds, they reach 41%. So you can reach 6% of 18 to 34 year olds, that magic demographic, on an average TV channel versus 41% on Snapchat. Pretty darn astounding. So what does it mean? What can you do with it? Well, we already knew that there was a lot of people, young people on Snapchat. They are getting a little bit older, so it's not your preteens, your 13, 15, 18-year-olds. There's still plenty of those, but the 18, 34-year-old range, you can reach 41% of them on Snapchat. And obviously, there's a lot of younger ones as well. So what does that mean? You have to really think about the platform. It doesn't mean you check off the Snapchat box and go, oh, geez, we need to reach young people, so let's make sure we get on Snapchat. It means understanding the platform, building content that looks native to it and not repurposed content, using it to engage. Snapchat is the social media network that has the most personal, most people actually proactively posting on it. So take advantage of that and give people a reason to post with a filter or a contest or a back and forth. And again, package it for the platform in the right manner. Pay attention to how other people are using it, how other successful brands are using it, and jump on. Because, yes, you want to reach those 18 to 34-year-olds, but you want to reach 18 to 34-year-olds in the way that 18 to 34-year-olds prefer to consume. So think about it, talk about it, learn from it, and it's a pretty astounding number. The average TV channel, you can reach 6% of 18 to 34-year-olds. Versus on Snapchat, you can reach 41% of that age group. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back for our Decker on Display segment when we get to know a little more about Josh Decker, CEO of Tagboard.
All right, that was this episode's shareable stat, but we've had some good stats from Josh as well, our guest, and we are right back with Josh Decker, CEO of Tagword. Josh, you kicked ass in your interview. Are you now ready for some Decker on display?
I think I know what that means. I'm not sure, but yeah, I'm ready.
We will not be displaying all your answers for all the listeners, at this point at least, although we might create a podcast tag board. and biggest wow moment you had as CEO of Tagboard, you know, maybe that first event where you're like, holy crap, we got something here.
I'm trying to think of the first goosebumps moment, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, that definitely happened when I was in LA 4 years ago at the LA Auto Show, and I saw this amazing Audi tag board above their booth, and I saw social content being posted to it in almost near real time through our system. That to me was like, and to see the reaction of the fans that would walk in, take a picture with that R8, and then see it posted in like 30 seconds later, man, it was something else. It created so much user joy. Those people weren't leaving that booth for a half hour or an hour. They couldn't. I mean, they kept saying they would take a picture of it, and then like 5 minutes later, it would cycle through and come back up again, and then take a video of it, and then you know they take a selfie with it. It was like, and then after like an hour of this thing running, you had dozens of people who were filling this booth. The main purpose that they were in there was to see their photo up on the screen. And that to me was like this aha moment where I was like, this is not just a gimmick. This is providing true, authentic user joy. It's providing a moment in time that fan will probably never forget. They'll probably post it to their Facebook and Instagram and everywhere else. And we saw that happen then. The next step from that was when we took it to the Mariners and we put it in Safeco Field, and you could sit up in the press box or the control room and look down, and you could hear little like groups of teenage girls or a group of college guys or whatever, when their photo went up on the board, you could like hear them audibly yell or scream from like, you know, hundreds of seats away, and you could see the amount of excitement that brought them. And that really was the aha moment for us. It was like we've created something that not just brings communities together, but it really does create a really fun experience for the fan.
That's so cool. I'm having this like this meta picture in my head now of someone taking a selfie of their selfie on the tag board, and then taking a selfie of that selfie, and I'm lost.
All that. It's a well-known occurrence. It happens all the time, and I think the record was YouTube LA. Somebody had done it like 7 or 8 times in a row. We call it Tagboardception. It's pretty fun to do. It happens almost every time that there's a display up, and you can kind of get closer to it, like at a conference or something, or at a party or whatever. We see people do that.
Oh man, I think I might have to create a tagboard for Tagboardception now, so I can follow that shit.
Sure.
Number two for you, Josh. The biggest lesson you've learned as CEO of a startup at Tagboard and/or at your previous stops.
That you got to keep your pride out of the way. You got to understand that it's not about, you know, I came up with the original idea and that's where my ability stopped. It's the team that's around me and the team that makes up Tagboard that makes Tagboard a success. And I think that's the biggest moment for me is in a couple of the times when I've had failures in my past that I talked about earlier, I was trying to do everything. I was trying to like be the answer to all the problems that we had, and I couldn't physically do that. And now at Tagboard, you know, I have a team of people here that are so capable and so skilled, and like I said before, I hire people that are smarter than me, and I get out of their way, and I shift into that support mode where how can I make them succeed? How can I help them succeed in their role? And I think that's the biggest thing for me is I don't try to do everything myself. It's not all about me. It's about the team that we have here. And this is no longer my idea. It's our idea. And it's shifted and shaped, and it's become much more beautiful and complete than it could ever have been on my own.
I love that. It's a great sentiment for sure. Number three for you, I like this one. Your favorite sports and non-sports event you've attended where Tagboard has been utilized?
Whew. Okay, well, my favorite sports events that I've attended where Tagrid was utilized, it's a little bit not specific. So basically, we at Super Bowl 48, the Seahawks had used us for the whole playoff run. And they actually had screens like in the locker room area, and they were using it, you know, in their private areas. And so we were kind of part of that whole process with the team. And so for me to be able to go to the Super Bowl and be there and see the Seahawks get their first Super Bowl victory, that was the most special moment for me. Oh, yeah. Just because I felt like we were part of the narrative, even though we weren't being used at the Super Bowl, that they were using something proprietary there that year, unfortunately. But, That was the most special moment to me. I got to share it with my brother. You know, we used to grow up going to Seahawks games with my dad when we were little kids, and I was actually wearing my dad's like starter jacket from like 1981 probably or something at the game. And so it was like a spiritual experience for me. And just to be able to be a small part of the narrative, that was pretty special. And then what was the other part of the question?
The your favorite non-sports event for Tag Board.
I know the
LA Auto Show was up there. I'm sure that I know that first Audi show, that Audi event was up there.
Yeah, too. I mean, that one will always be special to me. I could definitely say that one was probably my favorite non-sports related. Mm-hmm. But I was actually thinking more along the lines of my favorite time I've seen Tag Board used in a non-sports fashion. So I'm going to answer it differently. Okay, so I wasn't there. It was an online thing. It was actually happened in Texas. You know the guy, you know, I'm sure you know a guy named Chris Yates.
Oh, yeah.
And so Chris was an early adopter of Tag Board, and he started using Tag Board to help create awareness for one of his friends who was battling cancer. And I saw the hashtag Save Danielle trending on Tag Board, and I was like, what the heck? What the heck is that? I just did some research. I figured out that he was the one that created Tag Board, so I reached out to him and said, I don't know what this is. It sounds like she has cancer or something. Is there anything that Tag Board can do to help? So what I did then was got on the phone with him, and that's when I first met Chris. And what happened there was they used Tag Board to bring together the conversation, and they ended up raising awareness, and they ended up getting to the point where it was on the news, and Troy Aikman came out, and they raised money, and they did a blood donation thing for just to do some good in the community. Mm-hmm. And they raised money for her, and she ended up fighting cancer, beating cancer, and Tag Board played a pretty pivotal role in bringing that community of like hundreds of people, maybe 1,000 or more people together to support this lady. And that, for me, was one of the most meaningful things, because it had nothing to do with money or public display or the Tag Board brand getting out there at all. It had to do with something like, we help this community come together and help one of their own. And that's actually, you know, Chris has become a friend, and it's been really cool to see that happen. But that's a really fun story about how somebody found Tag Board, used it, and help make someone's life better in their community.
That's inspiring for sure. Number four for you, Josh, your all-time favorite hashtag and why?
Oh, geez. I'll tell you what it is. The hashtag Michaela is not impressed. Because I'm sure you remember the Olympics 4-plus years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Michaela Maroney, and like she became kind of like this inspirational thing for us. We had these huge Michaela Maroney things hanging in our windows, looking out over the parking lot, and we just really enjoyed seeing Tagrid being used by people all over to kind of like share a meme and share a fun experience or moment, and that was really fun for us. And so that one will always be near and dear to my heart, just because it was such a fun thing to do. And but yeah, that's probably one of my favorite, just kind of humorous ones.
Totally. I love that. Number five for you. You guys are a big presence at a lot of conferences, both participating and also helping with their aggregation. So I want to know the best sports-related conference that you've attended or at which you've spoken.
You know, it's a hard one because I think each of the different sports conferences that I've been a part of, everything from South by Sports to leaders conferences around the world to hashtag sports and so many others. I mean, I'm probably forgetting a lot of really important ones too, but it's really unique because I feel like, you know, the PR Sports Summit was really great. For me, I don't really think I could choose a specific one because they all have their unique value. I prefer the ones that are kind of more closer to the ground. What I mean by that is, you know, the majority of people not wearing suits, you know, people coming and representing their, like the, I think it was called NACMA, NACTA down in Dallas was really fun. You're just part of the, like, you're immersed into a community. And as some of the higher brow ones that are really expensive, and there's some of the ones that are international, you end up coming into these sessions and speaking or having a booth, and everyone's like in these suits and they're just like stuffy. And I'm like, one of my goals in life is to help everyone untuck their shirts, because I feel like, you know, I'm the only time I ever tuck my shirt in is if I'm wearing a proper suit. And even then I'm trying to figure out a way to not tuck my shirt in, but it's something where, I think people just, when your shirt's untucked, you're relaxed. And so the conferences like the NACMAs of the world, where you kind of have more everyday people at the event, walking around in polo shirts or things like that, I think that for me is a lot more comfortable environment. And I don't feel like I have to be in sales pitch mode. I can just kind of be talking to people, and that's fun.
I like that for sure. This is another tough one for you, so maybe we can go with what you've seen recently, perhaps. Number six for you, Josh. The sports team or teams that best utilize UGC, user-generated content, and why you think that is.
Oh, my gosh.
I know it's like two in between kids, almost. You got so many people you know, so it can be something you've seen recently, perhaps, that sticks out in your mind, or wherever you want to go with this.
To be honest with you, there's probably 40 or 50 teams that are using Tagboard in really unique and creative ways. We try to give our clients the opportunity to do something unique, so that if you go from the Mariners to the Seahawks to a Sounders to UW to whatever, or you're watching the news and it comes on, that this experience you see with Tagboard for each of those different clients is something unique. I will say that the Seahawks have been always on the forefront as far as I'm concerned. They're just taking, like, Kenton is amazing. If you guys don't know Kenton, Kenton's really and his team are really great. They're always coming to us with new ideas. What about this? One of the coolest things that we did with them recently was we built an interaction tool that allowed them to utilize social content to then, like, if I'm wearing a Steve Largent throwback number 80 jersey and I'm featured on their tag board, then they can put a link to that jersey below the post. And so not only can I share my cool picture of me and my new jersey I got for my birthday, which is a true story, by the way, but they can put a link below it for other people, like, oh my gosh, that's such a badass throwback jersey, I need that too, and they can go and buy it. And so kind of providing that loop there, but they've also done a lot of things. They were the first NFL team to, like, bring it into training camp and put it in the live stream. So when you're watching this 2-hour long streaming of training camp, that tweets are going along the bottom of the screen. You know, they've done a lot of things like that to where I feel like they deserve some recognition for taking some risk with us. And I look back over the last 3+ seasons of working with them, it's been really fun to see all the different things that they were the first to try out, and they seem to be pretty willing to take risks with us, which is great.
Nice, yeah, I like that.
But there's so many other people that have done other things like that. Scott Kegley, and when he was at the 49ers, was a great example of that. Mm-hmm. Doing beacon powered screens that we did as a partnership with Venue Next. Another thing that we did with him was we launched two stadiums together, both at Levi's Stadium and all those new screens and interactions. And then he went over to obviously the Vikings and launched that new stadium. And he was they put Snapchat up in the stadium. They were the first NFL team to do that. So obviously taking risks there as well. So he deserves some shout out.
That's great. All right, finishing up now with Josh Decker, CEO of Tagboard. Tell me your number one piece of advice for a team that wants to better drive its fans to post to a hashtag or to take part in that UGC campaign.
The number one thing I'll tell you is be authentic. The hashtag that is the most successful for you is likely going to be the one that your community is already using. Don't force it. Don't try to put a sponsorship name in your hashtag. Don't try to manipulate it them to do something different. Look at what your community is already doing and connect with that and put your efforts behind that. And that's the number one thing I can say. And a great example of that is Audi in 2012 launched a campaign called Want an R8. Hashtag Want an R8. I think we all want an R8, right? I'm still wanting to get my first one. And that was a user-generated hashtag that became the number one at the time. I'm sure it's been overtaken at this point by now, but it was the most successful Twitter campaign, hashtag campaign in the history of Twitter as recently as 2015.
Wow.
And it was because it was user-generated. It was they took it from the heart of the community and they ran with it from there. And that is don't force it. Don't try to come up with something that's not organic already. You have enough fans out there to where they're going to tell you what hashtag to use, and keep it authentic, keep it real, and you're gonna be surprised at how much better off it works for you than when you try to force something in that doesn't fit with your community.
Everything. I think authenticity is always going to be a key factor for sure. All right, this one's always fun, Josh. I want to know up in the Northwest, in Seattle in particular, your hometown. Tell me the best food to get in Seattle.
Ooh.
Best place to go.
Wow. Well, you have to come to Seattle and get some good food. And seafood is obviously what we're most well known for. One of my favorite restaurants. It's the restaurant that my parents, took me to when it was my birthday, when I was a kid and stuff. It was called Anthony's Homeport. And there's a bunch of them around, but that's kind of the place you go for the freshest seafood in town or the biggest, fattest steak in town. So Anthony's Homeport is, they're getting a little bit dated now because most of the restaurants are, 30 plus years old and since they've been most recently updated. But I love it because when my parents come to visit, that's where they want to go, right? And we go back to that place and it feels like you're stepping back into the 90s. Mm-hmm. But the food is great, and you typically have a great view of the water somewhere. It's the place I took my wife on our very first date, over 15 years ago, 16 years ago now.
Love that.
So to me personally, that's like the most meaningful restaurant in town just because it has a lot of sentimental value to me, but also the food's really good.
That's perfect. All right, last one for you, Josh, before you take over here. Tell me, which is going to happen first? Is Seattle going to get an NHL team, or are they going to get an NBA team? I know Russell Wilson's helping to get both of them now.
Okay, so this is a true story. I've been talking about it for several years now, that one of my personal goals in life and one of my ambitions, like when I'm setting the bar really high for myself, right, I want to be part of the group that brings back the Sonics. Now, if they do it without me and before I'm ready for it, before I have, financial wherewithal to actually contribute to that, then I'm going to be all for it. But, like, one of the driving things behind me is to become a success in life so I can bring value and give back to my community. And for me, that means bring the Sonics back. Not about money, not about fame. Mm-hmm. It's about the fact that it's a hole in our community. It was stolen away from us. Ripped out of our hearts, kind of feel like your heart's ripped out of your chest, and I want to restore that. And so one of my goals, for Tagboard is for it to be successful enough for me to be in a position to contribute to that in some factor. Now, whether it means I'm, contributing 1% or maybe I'm just volunteering my efforts to help those guys who are already, forging the way, Chris Hansen and Russell Wilson and all these other people to do it right. But if I can be part of that in some way and help contribute to that and bring it back sooner, then I'm going to be really excited with that.
I'm rooting for you for sure. That'd be awesome to see them come back and see that you're going to get the team back. All right, Josh, you survived your Decker on Display segment. Now your chance to take over the podcast and tell us your social media all-star to follow. Someone on Twitter, who they are, and why they're worth following.
Wow. Well, we all already follow her, but Jessica Smith is continually not just, like, whenever there's something happening in the world, and you can kind of, like, she can, like, summarize it and post a tweet that's like, damn it, she took the words out of my mouth, and I didn't even know what they were yet, and she's so eloquent with that. But she also posts really good blog posts that give back to the community, and she is continually learning new things, continually sharing those learnings with the SM Sports community. So Jessica Smith is my choice for that, and I really enjoy her writing, and hope to I'm sure that she's probably the answer that most people come up with. But
she is definitely the most frequently mentioned, but for good reason. She is great for sure. And how about yourself, Josh? Where can we find you and Tagboard on social?
I'm easy, 4 digits, JDBT on Twitter, JDBTXYZ on Instagram, and I've been getting really into Snapchat lately. I've got the spectacles now, and so you can follow me on Snapchat at JDBT as
well. Ooh, fancy with the spectacles. I like it.
Yeah, fun. And then obviously Tagboard is at Tagboard at all the different networks. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to see some of the things that we're doing there, we're trying to get more purposeful about telling our story, so you'll start seeing some more videos and stories and stuff coming out about us here in the next few months.
That's great. I certainly encourage anyone to visit tagboard.com and build your own tagboard and see what it's like. It's really cool and really user-friendly. Well, Josh, cannot thank you enough for the time today, man. It's been so great to pick your brain a little bit, learn about Tagboard's story and what you guys are doing, and it's going to be great to see you guys continue to grow as we move forward here in more events and more communities that you're bringing together.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Sorry I was so long-winded. If somebody actually made it through this whole podcast, I'm really impressed. But if they did so, it was because you're asking really great questions, and it's a fun conversation.
Hey, well, thanks a lot, Josh. I appreciate it. And best of luck moving forward with everything. We'll be watching and posting about it for sure.
Okay, sounds good. See you.
All right, thanks a lot, Josh.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Well, thanks so much to Josh Decker, CEO of Tagboard. Just so much good knowledge from him. A lot of fun stories. Great guy, and really enjoy the product and everything that they're doing. If you want to check it out, go to tagboard.com today and make yourself a tagboard. It's that easy. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Again, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Please visit the website, dsmsports.net, to see other content and previous episodes. You can also follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and check me out and connect with me on LinkedIn as well. And I'll see you next time on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.